Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, March 3rd, 2022. Coming up this hour,
Russia presses ahead in Ukraine as the war enters its second week.
Oil continues its march higher, hitting the highest level since 2008.
Jay Powell stands pat on plans for a rate hike this month.
And the January 6th panel says evidence suggests crimes committed by Donald Trump.
New York school chancellor says he wants to stop the exodus of students. Plus, Supreme Court nominee Brown Jackson is making the rounds on Capitol Hill. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stash, Aaron Swartz. The Knicks lost in Philadelphia. The Rangers beat the Blues. College Hoop wins for St. John's, Seton Hall, and Rutgers.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. stock index futures are little changed to lower this morning. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are down 2.5 points, and Dow futures are down 4, so they're both pretty much little changed. NASDAQ futures lower, down 37. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.7%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32. The yield, 1.87%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.50%. And NYMEX crude oil is up 2.5%. Nathan.
Karen, we'll have more on the markets in a minute. But first, the war in Ukraine is now into its second week. Russian forces are pressing ahead with their offensive, firing missiles at the capital of Kiev. Moscow's also stepped up a campaign to take cities in the south. Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, says Russian troops will be met with force.
Wherever they go, they will be destroyed. They will not have calm here. They will not have food. They will not have one quiet moment. The occupiers will receive only one thing from Ukrainians: resistance, fierce resistance.
President Vladimir Zelensky is telling Russian troops to go home. Ukraine is set for a second round of talks with Moscow today.
Meantime, Nathan, the United Nations is ramping up its rhetoric on Russia. The UN Secretary General is demanding Moscow remove troops from Ukraine. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
An overwhelming majority of the General Assembly back Russian condemnation, 141-4, 5 against, 35 abstain. Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the world demands peace.
People in Ukraine desperately need peace, and people around the world demand it.
This is representatives from Ukraine and Russia are headed to the Belarus-Poland border today for a second round of talks. And Secretary of State Antony Blinken is headed to Europe for talks with NATO allies. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Ed. Russian finances are feeling more pain this morning. The country's credit rating has been cut to junk by both Moody's and Fitch Ratings. Both warn that sanctions could undermine Russia's capability and willingness to service debt.
Well, oil continues its march higher this morning, Nathan, hitting levels we haven't seen in 14 years. And we get the latest live from Bloomberg's John Tucker. John, good morning.
Karen, buyers continue to shun Russian crude, and traders are betting that prices will keep rising. Don't expect any help from OPEC Plus. After a 13-minute meeting, they stuck to just a mild increase in production. And don't expect much help from U.S. shale producers. They say labor and material shortages are hurting their production. And it's not just oil. Commodities are rising across the board. Bloomberg's gauge of raw materials is closing in on the biggest weekly gain in 60 years. Aluminum hit a record. Wheat prices extended their meteoric rally. These commodities are not subject to sanctions, but surging freight and insurance costs are keeping buyers away. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, John, thank you. Now, despite risks from Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Jay Powell is making the fight against inflation his top priority. The Fed chair testified before a House panel yesterday saying he supports a rate hike later this month.
I do think it will be appropriate to raise our target range for the federal funds rate at the March meeting in a couple of weeks, and I'm inclined to propose and support a 25 basis point rate hike. And to the extent inflation comes in higher or is more persistently high than that, then we would be prepared to move more aggressively by raising the federal funds rate by more than 25 basis points.
Fed Chair Jay Powell testifies before Congress again today, this time to the Senate Banking Committee.
Nathan, the next major event for Jay Powell and the Fed is Friday's jobs report. Over the past year, rapid wage growth left businesses scrambling to keep up, and it looks like that trend will continue. Bloomberg's Renita Young joins us now with the details. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Karen. The February jobs report is expected to show average hourly earnings rose 0.5% last month, pushing year-over-year gains close to 6%. And if you exclude two pandemic-distorted prints in 2020, the annual increase would be the strongest in data going back 15 years. Some slowing is expected, but wage growth is poised to remain exceptionally strong this year. High labor costs are yet another factor the Fed will have to contend with as it works to cool the hottest inflation in a generation. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Renita. Turning to politics now, we have new developments involving the January 6th attack on the Capitol. The Congressional Committee investigating the incident says it may have evidence that former President Trump was part of a criminal conspiracy. Amy Morris reports from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
The committee says Trump advisor John Eastman's emails to Vice President Mike Pence's lawyer show evidence of obstruction of an official proceeding, a felony that carries a maximum of 20 years in prison. In the emails, he blames Pence for the riot and says, quote, "I implore you to consider one more relatively minor violation of the Electoral Count Act and adjourn for 10 days. In a court filing, the committee says Eastman knew what he was proposing would violate the law, but pushed the vice president to do it anyway. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Amy, thank you. Well, let's turn back to the markets now with some corporate items of note this morning. Shares of Snowflake are plunging. They're down more than 21% after the software company projected slowing sales growth. It's expected to fall from a previous triple-digit percentage pace.
And Tesla's back in the news, Karen. CEO Elon Musk is challenging the United Auto Workers Union to hold a vote at his California factory. Musk says Tesla will do nothing to stop union organizers. The challenge comes after President Biden again failed to mention Tesla while promoting electric vehicles in his State of the Union address. The White House is a big supporter of labor unions. Right now, S&P futures are down almost 5 points. Dow futures down 20. NASDAQ futures lower by 44 points. The 10-year Treasury is up 2/32. The yield right now 1.86%. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg. It's now 5:07 on Wall Street. Got some showers this morning. 44 degrees in Central Park. There's a crash on the Harlem River Drive southbound by 125th. Details on that coming up in traffic first. Michael Barr with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. People in New York are coming together to show support for Ukraine as the Russian invasion continues. Hundreds of people gathered at St. George Ukrainian Catholic Church in the East Village last night to sing and pray. The church has become a focal point for the humanitarian effort by raising funds from everything from food and clothing to medical supplies. Among the worshipers, New York Governor Kathy Hochul.
We stand with all of you, and may God bless the people of Ukraine.
New York City has the largest Ukrainian population in the U.S. President Biden's pick to replace Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer is making the rounds on Capitol Hill. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson met with lawmakers. Her confirmation hearings could begin soon. Japanese scientists say the Omicron strain of COVID-19 is at least 40% more lethal than seasonal flu. Countries around the world have been relaxing mask mandates and testing requirements. A visibly annoyed Florida Governor Ron DeSantis admonished a group of students for wearing face masks at an indoor news conference. It happened before he spoke about cybersecurity and education at the University of South Florida in Tampa.
You do not have to wear those masks. I mean, please take them off. Honestly, it's not doing anything, and we got to stop with this COVID theater. So if you want to wear it, fine, but this is ridiculous.
Some of the students took their masks off before Governor DeSantis took the podium. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy received some good news about the state, a credit rating upgrade. The story from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Moody's Investors Service raised New Jersey's credit rating, giving the state its first upgrade since 2005 after years of pension underfunding and benefit increases. An upgrade can lead to reduced borrowing costs for states as bond investors are willing to accept lower yields from issuers considered less likely to default. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
New York City Schools Chancellor David Banks pledged to bring a new normal to the U.S.'s largest school system. He outlined a plan to reverse an exodus of students by improving digital learning, reducing bureaucracy, and expanding gifted programs. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Coming up to 5:10 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stanshauer.
All right, good morning, Nathan. Familiar script for the Knicks. Good start, not a good finish. Another loss, now 16 losses in the last 19 games in Philadelphia. Knicks didn't trail until the third quarter, but the Sixers won at 123-108. They sweep the home-and-home. Joel Embiid, 27 points. He took 13 free throws. That's down from the 27 that he took in Sunday's game at the Garden. James Harden in his home debut in Philly, 26 points, a near triple-double. R.J. Barrett led the Knicks with 30. Julius Randle had 24, but Alec Burks and Evan Fournier together shot 3 of 19. Nets home tonight for Miami. Kevin Durant makes his return from the knee injury that's kept him out for more than 6 weeks. The East leading Heat last night in Milwaukee, led by 14 with 6 minutes to go. The Bucks rallied to win by one. At the Garden, Rangers led St. Louis 2-0, then trailed 3-2 in the third.
One here. Here's Hunt toward the net. Here's Strome a little too deep, and he puts it on goal. Stop, rebound. They score! Patrick Nemeth from the point bites it in off Barbashev, and Patrick Nemeth has tied the game at 3.
EPN, the call. Chris Kreider would add a power play goal. His 35th goal of the season. The Rangers beat the Blues 5-3. Big 48-point second half for St. John's. Red Storm beat Xavier 81-66. Also the Big East. Seton Hall down Georgetown 73-68. The Hoyas are 0-18 in the Big East, and yet the school says it is committed to its coach, who happens to be greatest player in school history, Patrick Ewing. Rutgers helped its NCAA hopes with a win at Indiana. The Giants shed some payroll. They cut running back Devontae Booker and tight end Kyle Rudolph. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. S&P futures now down 7 points. Dow futures down 34. NASDAQ futures lower by 54 points. The 10-year Treasury yield 1.86%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30. Weather: showers will end this morning. We'll get up to the low 40s with a breeze. Mostly sunny tomorrow, upper 30s. We'll be in the mid 40s, mostly cloudy by Saturday. Right now, showers and 44 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks reversed earlier gains with Europe's Stoxx 600 index lower, along with U.S. stock index futures. Oil soaring to the highest level since 2008. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 8 points. Dow futures down 46. And NASDAQ futures down 55. The DAX in Germany is down 0.9%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 1.86%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.5%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2.4%, up $2.75 at $113.35 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.6%, or $11.40 at $1933.70 an ounce. The euro, 1.1085 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3388. The yen's at 115.73. And Bitcoin moving lower at $43,250. Today we are looking for the weekly report on initial jobless claims at an 8:30 Wall Street time, at tenants' factory orders and durable goods orders, as well as a look at service industries and Best Buy and Gap, among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. The UN Refugee Agency says 1 million people have fled Ukraine since Russia invaded the country a week ago. Meanwhile, Russia fired missiles at Kyiv overnight and stepped up their campaign to take cities in the coastal south. In a reversal, Russian and Belarusian athletes have been banned from the Paralympics for their country's roles in the war in Ukraine. The International Paralympic Committee announced the about-face less than 24 hours after saying it would allow Russian and Belarusian athletes to compete when the games open tomorrow. In the NBA, the Knicks lost. In the NHL, the Rangers won. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and our executive editor for international government, Rosalyn Matheson, is with us this morning as the war in Ukraine enters its second week. Roz, good morning. If you could get us up to speed on the latest we're hearing on developments on the ground.
What we're hearing is, again, a sustained concentration of effort in the southern part of Ukraine, the city of Kherson, of course, falling, and now reports that Russian naval vessels are moving towards the port of Odessa. Of course, that's a really key city and port in the south of Ukraine. That's really the gateway for trade in commodities and other things into many other parts of Europe, and very sustained fighting going on in the vicinity of Odessa and Mariupol, another city that's also there. So we're seeing signs of progress, want of a better word, by Russian forces on the ground in the south. That's even as they remain quite bogged down in the north. Still no movement closer to Kiev, the capital, even though there's been shelling overnight in both the capital, Kiev, and the second biggest city in Ukraine, Kharkiv. So we're seeing movement in the south, pretty much the status quo in the north, but certainly the sense that Russia is making some progress in capturing some key cities here.
Well, with Russia making that kind of progress, particularly in the south, what could it tell us about the potential strategy from Russia as it continues this campaign? What could be coming next?
What we're expecting is further aerial bombardment, in particular efforts to squeeze these cities. It's very clear that Ukrainians who are based in the south in these places are unable to get out, or certainly struggling to get out. At this point, there's no corridor really for them to leave safely and for food and medicine to come the other way. So what you're seeing is these cities coming into sort of states of relative desperation at this point as we enter the second week of this conflict. Many smaller towns in the east of Ukraine have been destroyed and villages are bombed and destroyed altogether. So people are there unable to go. So do you get a point where things become so desperate in those places that people decide to give up the fight? So far, the resilience of the Ukrainian people and their military has probably shocked the Russians in terms of what they thought their progress would be so far.
And we're certainly seeing that desperation, signs of that playing out as more than a million refugees have now fled the country. Is Europe ready for this kind of influx, these crowds of Ukrainians heading their way?
Certainly, the European Union seems to be doing as much as it can, funneling resources and help further to the east to assist those countries who are receiving the bulk of people. That includes countries like Poland, of course, but also the EU centrally doing things like expediting the ability of Ukrainians to work in the European Union, to be able to move around without too much difficulty. And that's a little bit unusual for the EU, we should say, which is often as a bloc grappled with how to take a collective approach to migration crises that we've seen come in previous years and indeed decades, and a tendency in some countries at least to say, well, we don't want to have too many people come here because of the economic burden that would place on us. At least in this early stage, it's very much open arms all around. Whether that continues, particularly if the exodus picks up even more, remains to be seen. But right now, it's doing as much as they can.
And of course, we're watching the impact of sanctions as well, the credit rating of Russia being cut and assets of oligarchs being seized. Are we seeing any evidence that this financial war that's taking place with Russia is having any impact on the ground?
Doesn't appear to be. If anything, it's expediting things because perhaps the Russian president wants to get his stated goals in Ukraine achieved sooner rather than later. So if it makes him perhaps more erratic, more dangerous, more willing to do things, that might be a repercussion. On the ground in Russia, you're seeing a strong sense of resignation amongst ordinary Russians, the difficulties they're now facing in their daily lives to access certain goods, to make certain purchases, to even move around the train stations with their bank cards, which may not be working at the moment. There seems to be quite a lot of disquiet amongst the upper echelons in terms of oligarchs, but no sign, at least so far, that that's translating into immediate risk for Putin himself.
Thanks for keeping us up to speed on all this, Roz. As always, Rosalind Matheson, our executive editor for international government for Bloomberg News, as we continue monitoring developments in the war in Ukraine, now into day 8. Looking ahead to the market open this morning on Wall Street, futures are moving a bit lower. We have S&P futures now down 9.5 points. Dow futures are lower by 66. NASDAQ futures on the decline by almost 62 points. The 10-year Treasury is now up 1/32. The yield 1.87%. The surge in crude continues with Brent up 1.9% at $115.08 a barrel for the international benchmark. West Texas Intermediate's up 2.3% at $113.12. We'll have more on the oil surge. And will we see a wage surge in the February jobs report? All that coming up as we check your top stories of the morning. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 1130 weather. This rain will end early this morning. We'll have clearing, breezy conditions, low 40s for highs. Upper 30s tomorrow, mostly cloudy by Saturday, mid 40s. Right now, rain in 44 in Central Park.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. The war in Ukraine is entering its second week. Russian forces are pressing ahead, firing missiles at the capital city of Kyiv. They're also stepping up campaigns to take cities in the south. Ukraine's President Vladimir Zelensky says Russian troops are being met with force.
Our army is doing everything to fully break the enemy. Nearly 9,000 Russians have been killed in 1 week.
President Vladimir Zelensky is telling Russian troops to go home.
Well, Karen, we're seeing the war continue to have a massive impact on commodities. Let's get the latest on that live from Bloomberg's John Tucker. John.
Nathan, Bloomberg's gauge of raw materials is closing in on the biggest weekly gain in 60 years as banks, importers, and shippers steer clear of Russian exports. Brent crude soared to near $120 a barrel. Aluminum hit a record. Wheat rallied to the highest level since 2008. And the decision by OPEC Plus to leave output plans unchanged adds to the risk that inflation will slow the global economy. Even before the invasion, U.S. retail gasoline was at its highest level since 2014. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Well, speaking of inflation, Jay Powell addresses the topic today in another round of congressional testimony. The Fed chair is making the fight against prices his top priority, saying he supports a rate hike later this month.
Up next to the Fed after that, Karen, will be Friday's jobs report. Rapid wage growth has left businesses scrambling to keep up. Looks like that trend's going to continue. Bloomberg's Renita Young joins us with the details on that. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning. The February jobs report is expected to show average hourly earnings rose 0.5% last month, pushing year-over-year gains close to 6%. And if you exclude two pandemic-distorted prints in 2020, the annual increase would be the strongest in data going back 15 years. Some slowing is expected, but wage growth is poised to remain exceptionally strong this year. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Renita, thank you. And in politics this morning, the January 6th congressional panel says evidence suggests crimes were committed by former President Trump. That's according to a filing in federal court. The panel says emails from Trump advisor John Eastman may contain evidence of obstruction of an official proceeding. Eastman is sued to block release of the emails. Futures are lower this morning. S&P futures down about 10 points. Dow futures down 58. NASDAQ futures also down about 58. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports, and this is Bloomberg.
5:33 on Wall Street. Showers, 43 degrees in Central Park. Northbound Route 1 and 9 is closed to Grand Street and Elizabeth. Michael Barr's here with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. People around the world are coming together to show support for Ukraine as the Russian invasion continues. In New York City, which has the largest Ukrainian population in the U.S., hundreds of people gathered at St. George Ukrainian Catholic Church in the East Village last night to sing and pray.
I will cry at home, I will cry when I pray, but not now, because this is my battle I'm fighting. Everyone is turning right now in soldier, and I'm soldier, so that's not the place to cry. I'll pray later.
Another one of the worshipers at the church was New York Governor Kathy Hochul. Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson has begun courting senators on Capitol Hill, making her case for confirmation in private meetings. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
I am just so pleased that the president has nominated someone of such amazing qualification and breadth of experience.
Democrats are working to move her nomination through the Senate within weeks. The ACLU has filed a lawsuit against the Texas Department for Family and Protective Services and Governor Greg Abbott for implementing a directive to investigate parents that provide gender-affirming care to transgender children. Meanwhile, a state district judge issued a temporary order halting the child abuse investigation of the family of a 16-year-old receiving gender-affirming care. The family's attorney, Shelley Skeen.
Every major medical association says that gender-affirming care is medically necessary.
Attorney Shelley Skeen. New York City Schools Chancellor wants to make remote learning an option again. David Banks outlined a plan to reverse an exodus of students by improving digital learning, reducing bureaucracy, and expanding gifted programs. Banks also wants to expand the number of safety officers patrolling hallways. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Here's John Stanshaw with the Bloomberg Sports Update.
All right, Nathan, last 6-7 weeks have been rough for the two New York City NBA teams. The Nets led the East until Kevin Durant's knee injury. Without him, they've lost 15 of their last 18 games. The good news, Durant returns tonight in Brooklyn against the East-leading Miami Heat. The Knicks, in mid-January, were over 500, looking like a playoff team. They've lost 16 of their last 19 in Philadelphia. Sixers took the lead third quarter, pulled away 123-108. James Harden, 26 points in a near triple-double in his home debut, a seamless adjustment to Harden's new team.
Very comfortable in a lot of situations, whether it's basketball or just in life. I feel like you can put me anywhere in a room and I can fit in. So here is no different. You know, just survey the room, see who's in it, you know, see what you have. And, you know, try your best to fit in.
It's not going to get any easier for the Knicks. 6 more games on the road tomorrow in Phoenix. The Suns have the best record in the NBA. Rangers with 3 goals, third period, beat St. Louis at the Garden 5-3. Chris Kreider, the go-ahead goal on the power play, his 35th goal of the season. 3 assists for Adam Fox. He's got 46 assists. Big East tournament next week at the Garden. Last night, St. John's beat Xavier 81-66. Seton Hall down Georgetown 73-68. Patrick Ewing's Hoyas 0-18 in the Big East. Looks like Seton Hall will be in the NCAA tournament. Rutgers said to be on the bubble. Helped its cause with a 3-point win at Indiana. Fordham dropped back under 500, losing at UMass. Northeast Conference tournament quarterfinal wins for Wagner and LIU. The season over for St. Francis. Lost by 30. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thanks, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street and time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
As the pandemic drags on, employees who move to New York City suburbs or even farther are becoming fixtures at city hotels. The Times reports some hotels eager to tap into this new market are crafting new packages designed specifically for them with amenities like parking, conference rooms, and low midweek rates to sweeten the deal. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy just got the one reward he's been after since taking office 4 years ago, a credit rating upgrade. On Wednesday, Moody's Investor Service raised New Jersey's credit rating, giving the state its first upgrade since 2005. Wegmans Food Markets is expanding to yet another state. The grocery chain plans to open its first location in Connecticut in Norwalk. The 95,000-square-foot two-level store will be on an 11-acre site off Connecticut Avenue near Connecticut's Interstate 95, according to a company announcement. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on KNX in Los Angeles, we're talking about Elon Musk daring the United Auto Workers Union to try and unionize Tesla's California factory.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Vodka drinkers are changing brands in the wake of the Ukrainian invasion.
I'm Caroline Hepcom, Bloomberg DAB, digital radio in London. We're reporting on Russia being ostracized, but not quickly enough. MPs want the Prime Minister here to do more to end the era of oligarchs.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting GM and Stellantis shares rose Wednesday after Ford said it'll split off its electric vehicle business.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It's just about 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. Some 8 million metric tons of plastic end up in the ocean each year, the equivalent of a garbage truck every minute. At this pace, the seas may have more plastic than fish by mid-century. The good news is that nearly 200 countries have just agreed to hammer out a treaty cleaning up the plastic mess, and businesses and policymakers don't need to wait to take action. Manufacturers can start by boosting the amount of recycled content they use and by producing simpler packaging that's easier to recycle. And governments can aim to make inventive replacements for plastic made from materials such as algae more cost competitive. The plastic emergency has been building for years. Unfortunately, the world doesn't have the luxury of time in solving it. The sooner these efforts start, the better. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPINGO on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time, and terminal customers can read more at OPINGO. This red headline just crossed the Bloomberg Terminal. Another major company is cutting off ties to the Russian economy. Volkswagen says it will stop production and halt exports to Russia with the war in Ukraine now into a second week. S&P futures now down 8 points. Dow futures down 34. NASDAQ futures down 55 points. The 10-year Treasury yield 1.86%. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather. Rain ending early this morning. Clearing, breezy. Low 40s for highs today. We'll be in the upper 30s. Mostly sunny tomorrow. Mostly cloudy. Mid 40s by Saturday. Right now, rain and 43 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks are falling, commodities surging as the war in Ukraine enters its second week. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 6 points this morning. Dow futures down 19. NASDAQ futures down 46. The DAX in Germany is down 1.1%. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 1.86%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.49%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2.7%, up $3.06 at $113.67 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.6% or $12.50 at $19.34.80 an ounce. The euro 1.1092 against the dollar. British pound 1.3388. Begins at 115.74. Bitcoin is down 1.5% at $43,450. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Darren, thank you kindly. A Hercules C-130 transport aircraft with about 2,000 anti-tank missiles for Ukraine has taken off from Oslo. Weapons are to help Ukrainian forces resist Russia's invasion, which began last week. Meanwhile, French customs officials have immobilized a yacht owned by Rosneft chief executive officer Igor Sechin as part of EU sanctions against Russia. The House panel investigating the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol said its evidence suggests crimes may have been committed by former President Trump and his associates in the failed effort to overturn the outcome of the 2020 presidential election. In the NBA, the Knicks lost. In the NHL, the Rangers won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Karen.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is 5:48 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
The big four international accounting firms are being pressured to drop some of their big Russian clients. Sanctions over the invasion of Ukraine have highlighted the firm's links to cronies of President Putin. A group of Lyft drivers in California asked the Ninth Circuit to reconsider its ruling that they must arbitrate sick leave and wage claims. A federal judge in Alabama threw out a race and sex discrimination case against Liberty National Life Insurance. A black ex-worker had alleged she was harassed by a white male agent.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Now another legal story we're watching brings us to the war in Ukraine. Nations around the world are ramping up sanctions against Russia. The Treasury and Commerce Departments have been trying to quickly implement the first phase of these restrictions through new rules. That means companies are trying to figure out how the restrictions apply to them, and their attorneys' phones are ringing off the hook. For more on the situation, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Chase Kanicki, a partner at Cleary Gottlieb, who's been getting many of these calls.
So what are your clients calling you about, or what are they most confused about?
We do get questions all over the map. You know, some are easier than others. Some require judgment calls because there's just, you know, lack of clarity. There's potentially some uncertainty with respect to whether a particular activity is covered by sanctions. But we usually start with the basics, and the basics are along the lines of, well, what jurisdiction does this particular activity or this transaction fall under? If it falls under U.S. jurisdiction, for example, it involves a U.S. company, or the transaction is going to be processed in U.S. dollars, here's the set of rules that apply as of today. If the transaction doesn't involve U.S. jurisdiction, but it involves U.K. jurisdiction or EU jurisdiction, it's helping companies understand exactly what set of rules apply to them on a case-by-case basis. And then once we kind of have an understanding of what those particular rules that apply are, does this transaction or some party that's involved in the transaction trip any of these sanctions? And if so, what do we do about it? Is it a non-starter? Can we just not complete the transaction? Or are there ways the transaction can be completed that are undertaken in compliance with, you know, the applicable sanctions regime?
So would you say that usually you have a slower ramp up of sanctions over time, but here you have several stages within a compressed period of time and more escalations are possible?
Exactly. That's right. I mean, it used to be the case, you know, look at the programs that apply to countries like Iran and even North Korea and Cuba. Those countries are just completely off limits for U.S. persons. The U.S. government, at least in recent years, hasn't really been taking that kind of broader, comprehensive approach, but instead is imposing at least what I call sort of smart sanctions, narrowly tailored sanctions. And you're right. You typically do see those in a more piecemeal way, where, you know, a sanction will be imposed, the U.S. government will see whether that sanction is having the impact that they want it to, and then if it's not, you know, an additional sanction might be imposed. But you're absolutely right. Here in the last week or so with the Russia sanctions program, it's just been a deluge of individual sanctions, but all kind of at the same time, and, you know, having to wrap your arms around exactly what all those mean and what's the landscape look like from various perspectives. It's not just U.S. sanctions, it's EU sanctions, it's U.K. sanctions. Countries around the world are imposing sanctions on Russia. And so it really is a multinational effort that you need to be thinking about when you're thinking about multinational companies engaging in transactions with Russia.
And that's Chase Kanicki, a partner at Cleary Gottlieb, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcast. Attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and on the Bloomberg Terminal at BLaw. Go, Nathan.
All right, Karen, thank you. It's 5:53 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're watching for Fed Chair Jerome Powell heading back to Capitol Hill in just a few hours for a second day of testimony, this time before the Senate Banking Committee. But the chairman has already had plenty to say about policy, as we heard yesterday when he spoke before the House Financial Services Committee.
Our monetary policy has been adapting to the evolving economic environment, and it will continue to do so. We've phased out our net asset purchases. With inflation well above 2% and a strong labor market, we expect it will be appropriate to raise the target range for the federal funds rate at our meeting later this month.
And here with more on what the chairman's had to say is our economics correspondent, Bloomberg's Michael McKee. Mike, good to have you with us this morning. And it sounds as though is not only the March meeting live, it's all but penciled in now.
Yeah. Jay Powell told Wall Street what they already thought they knew. And
yeah.
So there won't be much suspense going into the meeting, except we do get new forecasts for unemployment and inflation and interest rates. And so we'll see how much they think inflation is going to fall. Powell yesterday suggested they still anticipate a drop in inflation as the year goes on. But how far do they think it will go now because of the war and the elevated oil prices? Is there any chance we get a two handle?
Yeah, the transitory is definitely by the wayside at this point. It seems like the terminology has gone from transitory now to humble and nimble. What's that going to mean for policy going forward for the rest of the year?
Well, unfortunately for people on trading desks, it probably means uncertainty as they go into every meeting. Every meeting will probably be live, but we won't really have a good idea going into the meetings of the path going forward. A lot of analysts decided that we were going to see a 6 or 7 move Fed this year, and I think that's gone by the boards. The Fed is going to be prepared to go more or less depending on how the economy evolves, in large part due to the uncertainty over the Russian war, because we don't know what's going to happen with commodity prices and oil prices, how long they'll remain elevated, and how much that hits into corporate earnings and consumer confidence.
And that's certainly something we heard a lot from the chairman yesterday, saying it's too soon to tell the effect of the war, what it'll have on the U.S. economy. But I mean, if we get an energy shock from the effects on the commodities markets, I mean, that's going to have an inflationary impact, isn't it?
Oh, certainly. We're going to see. We had thought we might be plateauing in terms of energy prices. And as long as we're not seeing a rise every month, then inflation mathematically pauses and maybe even starts to go down. But now with oil prices where they are, it's going to keep rising for a couple of months. And that feeds into gasoline prices. And then that feeds into how much you have left over to spend other places. So we'll be watching retail sales as well to see what kind of impact that has.
It sounds like Uber data dependence. How much impact is the jobs report coming out tomorrow going to have, do you think?
I don't think it's going to have a lot of impact. The Fed will be looking to see that employment growth continued. They'll be interested to see what the pay situation was, what happened with average hourly earnings. But this is February data, and the war didn't start until March, basically. So what is it really going to tell the Fed about where we're going? Not a whole lot. It'll be interesting, but it will be probably quickly forgotten.
Just about 30 seconds left here, Mike. Are there any unanswered questions that Powell left on the table that you'll be looking for at the Senate hearing later this morning?
Not anything that he's going to answer, put it that way.
Okay.
We'd like to know more about what the path going forward is and when they might start reducing the balance sheet, but they want to keep that in reserve and make those decisions as they go along.
And it sounds like from a lot of what we've heard from the chairman, it's they simply just have a lot of uncertainty with the war continuing. Mike McKee, as always, thanks for being with us. Bloomberg Economics correspondent Michael McKee, as we get set for that second round of testimony from Chairman Powell. The Senate Banking Committee later on this morning, we will have full coverage for you here on Bloomberg Radio. Futures moving lower as we march toward the open on Wall Street. Stay with us as Bloomberg Daybreak continues. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio. Good morning.